You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the weekend. And thanks for kicking it off here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat on this Friday, May 3rd, the Rockets are practicing today for a second consecutive day. The good news, this is the third and final day of three straight non-game days during this stretched out round two series between the Rockets and Golden State Warriors. They last played Tuesday night in Game 2, and fortunately, the series finally resumes, this time here in Houston, on Saturday night at Toyota Center. And it's a game that, effectively, is a must-win for the Rockets. It's not technically an elimination game, but no NBA team has ever overcome a 3-0 deficit in a best-of-seven series, and it's hard to see that changing against what I consider to be the most talented roster ever assembled in the current Golden State Warriors. So the Rockets will be at home. They only lost the first two games by an average of 5 points on the road, so there's lots of reasons for optimism. The time off should certainly do them well. They've been frustrated by the officiating and a few other issues in the first two games. Also, James Harden with his eye issue, they expect that to be cleared up by Saturday night. So there's lots of reasons to believe that with the series shifting to Houston and all this time off in between Game 2 and Game 3, the Rockets should be able to clear their heads and have a very solid effort tomorrow night at Toyota Center. One of the guys that's been with the team out in Oakland through all the trials and tribulations of the first two games is Craig Ackerman. He's the voice of the team. Throughout the regular season, he's the voice on television for the road broadcast on AT&T Sportsnet Southwest. In the playoffs, of course, there are no local broadcasts. It's national only after round one, so he's shifted over to full-time radio duty. And in that capacity, he still travels with the team. So as we look forward to Game 3 and what needs to change as the Rockets get ready for what is, in my opinion, a clear must-win game, I can think of no one better suited to break it down than Craig, the guy who was out with them in Golden State for both Game 1 and Game 2, and of course will be on the call in Houston in tomorrow night's Game 3 on the Rockets radio network. So without further ado, let's hit the phone lines and get Craig connected right here at Locked On Rockets to start previewing Saturday night's Game 3. Craig, welcome home to Houston. Do you miss the Bay Area and their superior weather yet?
We've spent a lot of time out there over the last 4 or 5 years. The weather was nice. Had a nice trip out to the Golden Gate Bridge. But to be quite honest with you, I've had my fill of the Bay Area.
Yeah, I think everyone...
But I would love to go back, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I think anybody at this point would gladly take a Game 5 and Game 7 because it means that clearly you've won at least one basketball game and hopefully more than that. Craig, before we even get to the X's and O's, what went on as far as why the Rockets lost these two games, talk about the environment, playoff games at Oracle Arena, and what the bar is for Houston fans now that Game 3 is in Houston Saturday night.
Well, it's long been one of the best atmospheres in the league. I think some of that has changed a little bit as the Warriors have gotten better and better and better. I think their ticket prices have also gotten more and more expensive over the years, but it's a terrific crowd. I mean, obviously, that fan base who was out there supporting that team for 20 years when they had, I think they had only won one or two playoff series in that span, have been living on cloud nine over the last handful of years with arguably the best team in the history of the sport. I think the Rockets playoff crowd at Toyota Center, especially in the later starts, have been absolutely terrific. So I'm looking forward to an amazing home atmosphere. The next couple of games, the team is going to need that boost from its fans to be in it every second of the game like they are out there in Oakland, and should be good. Should be fun.
Did this extended layoff come at a good time for the Rockets? Because to me, you look at certainly physically the issue with James Harden and his eye. Looked like he wasn't fully ready to go if the game were on Thursday, and I'm sure he would have played. But at practice, he did not quite look himself. They expect by Saturday that will be resolved. So there's that. But also, emotionally, there's been a lot of frustration from these two games. And it just seems like, to me, I don't know if it's a huge advantage relative to the Warriors. Clearly, Golden State has the issue with Steph Curry's dislocated finger that'll help with as well. But just overall, it feels like a good point for the Rockets to get this three-day break. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I agree. When the first schedule first came out, I thought it was a little laughable that there was so much time in between games. But I think as it's turned out, especially as it pertains to James's eye, I think it's the perfect way to have this series schedule. Give him some time in between games. Obviously, he's been practicing and so forth, but time in between games to have his eye heal further for the Rockets to sort of regroup, rejuvenate, sort of recalibrate what they need to do moving forward in this series. Like, I give Golden State a ton of credit. Their defensive intensity has been amazing in these first two games, for sure. I think Draymond Green's been the best player so far in this series. He has been so disruptive at the defensive end of the floor. I mean, there is frustration. I mean, game one was the one that that you felt that the Rockets should have taken. Golden State was sloppy early. The Rockets missed a ton of open shots. That game was absolutely there for the taking. I think they were in some ways fortunate because of their three-point shooting to really be in game two because of their particular sloppiness, the turnovers, and lack of defensive rebounding. But, yeah, to just kind of take a deep breath here, relax a little bit. And frankly, the season is on the line tomorrow night. I think this goes without saying, but the Rockets have to win. Otherwise, at some point, inevitably, their season will come to an end because no team in the history of the league has ever come back from an 0-3 hole, and they're certainly not going to do it against this Warriors team.
What's the biggest change as far as Draymond versus Capella from last year's Western Conference Finals? Because I won't say that Clint was great in that series, but when you look back, especially the home games, Game 5 and Game 7, he had some good lines. He was playable even if he didn't close the game in the fourth quarter. Whereas Game 1 and Game 2, it felt like he never got his footing. And so I don't know if that's being on the road. I don't know if it's something that Draymond is doing. Just curious why you think Capella, at least through two games, has regressed against Golden State relative to last year.
I think a little bit of all of the above. You bring up last year's Western Conference Finals. Clint was terrific in the first round against Towns, was terrific against the Gobert in the Western Conference semifinals, and I really thought that last year his moment had arrived and he was going to have a big series against Golden State in the Western Conference Finals and was inconsistent. He had a couple of good games, but generally speaking, he was inconsistent a year ago, and then this time around, I thought that they needed him to play better than he did against Golden State a season ago, and he's actually been worse. He's been invisible so far in the series, and that's been a huge problem. I mean, Draymond Green, there was one possession in Game 2, I think, where he was defending all five Rockets in one possession. The Rockets were moving the ball over the floor, trying to find open shooters, and Green was flying all over the place. He has taken away the lob. He's shown a lot on those drives, and then he's been able to recover. So he's basically been defending two people at once. He's been terrific in this series. As much as Draymond frustrates me, and I know he frustrates Rockets fans, he's an outstanding basketball player, and I think people in Houston would welcome him with open arms if he was on the Rockets, kind of similar fashion as Pat Beverly. You would love to have him on your team, but my God, do you hate playing against the guy. But he has been a one-man wrecking crew. The Rockets' philosophy is they want to get him out of the paint, because they feel that when he's defending in the lane, he's incredibly disruptive. And I don't think they've done a good enough job of that. They've purposely been trying to set various screens using his man to get him out on the perimeter, but the Warriors have been switching back off of that. So I got to give them a lot of credit. But we talked about this, I think, when Clint went down with his thumb injury. He's the team's second most indispensable player because, in essence, – everything with their offense begins with that high screen and roll and the threat of the lob. And that's been a non-factor. Now, it was pretty much a non-factor as the first round series against Utah went along because Gobert was so good in the paint. And Draymond has been equal to the task. But Draymond's not 7'1", 7'2", with incredible length. So you would think that the lob, if executed correctly, would still be there. But Draymond's been terrific. And the Rockets, I don't think they have a chance to A, get back in this series, or B, win it if Clint Capella doesn't play like the player he was in the regular season. He had some great games against Golden State this year. He needs to get back to doing that, and he needs to do it starting tomorrow night, like right off the bat.
Remember, to get this show every day, you can subscribe to Locked on Rockets on the new Himalaya Podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, jumping back into the program, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. We're joined today by Craig Ackerman, voice of the team. He'll be on the radio calls this weekend on the Rockets radio network. Craig, we closed out segment one discussing Clint Capella versus Draymond Green, his roles in the struggles of this series. I believe his net rating in the 60 minutes he's played is minus 31. And the curious thing, you know, the Rockets only lost these games by an average of 5 points. I think their net rating with Capella off the floor is plus 30. So one of the musings that a lot of people on Twitter wondered about after game two, do you consider some sort of drastic lineup change? We heard from Mike D'Antoni at practice on Thursday that no, the starters will stay the same. And even though the numbers say that the Rockets have been better without Clint Capella, I'm in full agreement with leaving him in the starting lineup. And it sounds like you are as well, because even if you pull him, there's just no way you have the recipe to beat the Golden State Warriors four times. It doesn't matter. So if you're going to beat the Warriors, Capella has to get right. And if he's going to get right, you probably don't want to yank his confidence or mess with his confidence by yanking him in and out of the lineup.
I mean, at this stage of the season, teams don't drastically change who they are. I mean, they just don't. I mean, the Warriors made a lineup change, moving out their traditional big, sliding Green to the five and putting Andre Iguodala out there. But that group of five, the Hamptons five, the death lineup, those guys have played a lot of minutes with each other. That's not a drastic, you know, adjustment for Steve Kerr and the Warriors. It's business as usual. Why on earth would anybody even suggest not starting Clint Capella when he's been there all year, when he's been there as a rock in the middle for the last couple of years? And again, as the team's second most indispensable player, because of what he can do, especially with the Rockets' rebounding problems. They need him. They need him out there. He's their only rim protector. He's got to be more engaged. I think they tried to really get him involved right off the bat in game two. Perhaps maybe he's playing a little bit with some nerves. Maybe that settles down playing in front of his home crowd this weekend. He just has to play better, and they have to find a way to get him back involved in the offense. Mike D'Antoni, the coaches, they're far too smart to pull the guy at this stage of the season. It's not going to happen. He just has to play better, and they have to find a way to get that particular high screen and roll working to their advantage again. Just plain and simple, removing him just does not make any sense to me whatsoever at this point of the year. He's been a really good player for a very long time for the Rockets. You don't yank the guy.
Yeah, I agree. And the other aspect of this is that who do you put in his place? Now, I know Austin Rivers had a good game too, but unless you're going to play your starters 48 minutes, and obviously that's not going to work, then you need those minutes sopped up. And just as much as Clint has been a disappointment, pretty much the entire bench outside of Austin Rivers, Daniel House, Iman Shumpert, Gerald Green, Kenneth Fareed, Nene in his limited time, all of those guys to some degree have disappointed. So even if you were to make a change, which thankfully they're not, Mike D'Antoni seems to have quashed that idea, I'm not even sure who you could go to because the depth off the bench has been a problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, Nene was really good in game one. But historically speaking, since he's been in a Rockets uniform, he does not play much against Golden State. It's not the most ideal of matchups for Nene. And as you see, when he's on the floor, the Warriors are going to hunt switches to put Steph Curry on him every single time. And that's an advantage to Golden State. And so that's why you have to kind of play him sparingly. I know there's been a lot of conversation about perhaps maybe playing Kenneth Fareed more. He saw some earlier playing time in game two. I don't know if that was a product of they tried to see if they could get him working because of Clint's ineffectiveness, or perhaps maybe it was because James Harden went down in the first quarter of the eye injury and they just were forced to go to some different lineups. I know that Fareed had a big game against Golden State starting alongside Clint Capella with P.J. Tucker moving to the three, and that was the game that James Harden missed, and so it was Eric Gordon and Chris Paul in the backcourt. I don't think you're going to see Fareed start. I mean, maybe one minor adjustment the Rockets can make is to perhaps see if a Fareed-Capella combo with Tucker at the three, with some sort of combination of Eric Gordon, James Harden, and or Chris Paul in the backcourt, maybe see if that might solve some of your rebounding woes. But the issue there is that when you're playing Golden State, floor spacing is so important, especially against that death lineup that they like to play. And obviously with Fareed and Capella on the floor, you have two non-shooters, with all due respect to Kenneth, who knocked down more threes this year than he had in all of his previous years combined. Like there are some decisions that have to be made. Maybe they try that moving forward. But yes, I mean, as you said, Clint Capella's got to be out there. He's got to be effective if the Rockets want to have a chance in this series.
What's been the biggest problem for Daniel House? I think with Shumpert, we know it's been his jump shot. He's inconsistent. With House, we've seen throughout the year he can be a really good shooter. It just looks to me like maybe the moment is a bit big for him at times. The physicality of the playoffs, I think that's new for him as young as he is. Just curious your thoughts on what's going on with Daniel and if playing at home might help him.
Playoff inexperience. I think he had one good game against Utah. Other than that, he was not his regular season self. Still waiting for him to arrive in this series. Only played 5 minutes in game two. I mean, it's a concern. I think it comes down to just youth and inexperience, quite honestly. And hopefully, again, playing at home will have him settle in this series. They could use a lot from him because he's young, he's energetic, he's athletic. But he's missed screen assignments, you know, here against Golden State, which is so key against the Warriors, because the idea you've got to try to hunt for matchups that are favorable for James Harden in particular, and Mike D'Antoni's been frustrated with that. Shooting tends to come and go, and you'd think he would shoot it better at home, but again, some of the little things like missing screen assignments and switches defensively, and he's just kind of been in the wrong place at the wrong time. I think he, relative to the rest of the team, based on what's been going on so far in the playoffs, has a relative, you know, short leash. I think if he's going to get playing time in game three. And I think if he's successful, he'll get more playing time. If he's not, they'll just pull him out, and Mike D'Antoni will continue to ride those veterans over him. But they really could use some quality minutes from Daniel House moving forward.
Chris Paul is shooting nearly 50% from the field, 40% from three, yet he's only taken 11.5 shots per game. Do you think that he needs to be more aggressive looking for his offense?
I think so. I mean, he's been okay. I think they need more from him. Look, to beat Golden State, you need more from everyone. I mean, let's just be honest. The Rockets are a really, 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 really good basketball team. They're playing an all-time great team, and so to beat this team in one game, let alone now four times in the next five, you need to play either perfect basketball or near perfect basketball. And I think they need more from him. They need better efficiency from James Harden. They need Eric Gordon to continue to play like he has since the All-Star break. They need more stuff from Clint Capella. The bench needs to play better. And so I think the answer to all of the above is, yeah, they could use some more from Chris Paul, because again, to match up with Golden State, you have to be better. The Rockets defense, I think, has been good enough. I think it could be better, but I think it's absolutely been good enough to not only have won once, but have won twice. They've got to start rebounding the ball better at the defensive end. That's for sure. They've got to finish up those defensive sequence, but offensively, they've got to be crisper. They've got to stop turning the ball over. They've got to be more consistent, and that goes for Chris Paul and everybody else on the team.
We're wrapping things up here with Craig Ackerman, voice of the Rockets. I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets. Craig, you mentioned Chris Paul in the last segment. The other guy in the backcourt alongside him is James Harden. He had one of his best games in the postseason in a while. Really, his slump started with Game 3 in Salt Lake City. He shot nearly 50%, 29 on 9 of 19 shooting in Tuesday's Game 2. Played just 34 minutes because he missed a few in the first half with the eye situation. Craig, is there anything that James builds upon? I know that in this series he's going up against Andre Iguodala, who the Warriors did not have for all of that series a year ago, so clearly it's a step up in terms of the level of one-on-one defense. But did you see anything different from James in Game 2 that made you think that maybe he's on the verge of a breakout?
You know, I think some of his struggles against the Jazz were a credit to Utah and their defense. As crazy as it was, they really got good at it. As the series wore along, they took away his step back. Rudy Gobert, again, the preeminent rim protector in the league, really affected James on those floaters. The Warriors have been maybe it's just because maybe it's recency bias, but I think they're doubling hard and high on the ball more than I think they ever have on the Rockets. We've seen teams do that to James Harden. He's been able to pass out of the double teams and smartly so, and I think he will continue to do that, and you need other guys to kind of knock down shots. I think James is going to be fine. I mean, I don't expect the same level of efficiency in the postseason as we see from him in the regular season, because he's playing better teams and he's going through. And even though Golden State was not an elite defensive team this past year, they certainly have the capabilities of it, and I think they have been elite defensively so far in this series. And so I think his efficiency is going to be down, as is the case for Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, because the Rockets defense again has been good enough so far in this series. And so James just has to be able to, I think, recognize and understand what they're throwing at him. Again, I think Draymond Green has been sort of, when James has been able to play downhill, I think he's confused him a little bit by showing on the drives and then recovering back to Clint Capella. So I think James needs to be a little bit better in terms of recognizing what Draymond Green is going to do. I think they perhaps maybe need to challenge Draymond more in this series, try to see if they can get him in foul trouble. Curry's been in foul trouble. Some other guys from time to time have been in foul trouble, but Draymond Green has stayed out of foul trouble here in this series. And so I think that would be something that the Rockets can try to look at, being more aggressive and challenging Draymond to see if you can get him off the floor, because Golden State does not have anybody else on their roster that can do what he does. And so I think if maybe you can limit the minutes of Draymond Green and really look to attack him on the move downhill, get him in foul trouble and off the floor, I think would be a key for James. Just when he gets into the paint, just challenge the guy. Just go right at him and see what happens. But I think ultimately James Harden is going to be fine. He's going to put up his numbers here in this series, but they just need other players, everyone else around them to elevate their game.
How much of a difference does Iguodala make for them? I know you go back to the playoffs last year, and we know what the narrative has been on both sides. This series, of course, is one-on-one defense against Harden, but offensively, he's scoring 15 a game, and it just feels like his shots, you know, he's shooting over 76% from the field. He just has a way of punishing when you have too much attention on the perimeter. He has that back cut. Just curious your thoughts on what a difference he makes for those guys.
He's not the same player he was 6 or 7 years ago, but he's a heck of a player. And, you know, people always mention, well, the Warriors, they have 5 All-Stars. DeMarcus Cousins is down. They still have 4. No, they don't. They still have 5 more All-Stars. Andre Iguodala is a former All-Star. I mean, they have 5 guys who have played in the All-Star game. And obviously, you know, 2 all-world guys in Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. They still have 5 guys who are All-Stars. He's still a heck of a player. I mean, this is in part why the Rockets were interested in signing him this past summer, sort of, you know, addition by subtraction, if you will, taking away from Golden State. He's still a very effective, high IQ basketball player, very physical, still very athletic, and he's been terrific. He has been absolutely terrific here in this series, and it has been a problem. I think his presence on the floor has allowed them to double high on the Rockets' guards, and kind of getting them, you know, and in part has allowed, you know, really forced the Rockets to get out of rhythm offensively. You would think, fingers crossed, he's not going to continue to shoot it this efficiently as the series goes along, but I think he will continue to be a defensive presence, and the Rockets have to try to solve that problem on top of everything else.
Final question. How important is the start to Saturday night's game? Because I just keep going back. Craig, you've been -9 in the first quarter of both game 1 and game 2. You've outplayed them over the final 3. And it just seems like to me, you can correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but it feels like these two teams, they know each other so well that you don't really have any of these extended runs. Like both of these games, they've been kind of like 10 to 12 point bands. But the problem is that band has been tilted towards Golden State because they've gotten off to this 8-9 point lead after the first quarter. So as I see it, starting the game off well is a huge priority in Game 3.
Oh, absolutely. It might be the top key. In Game 1, Golden State was throwing the ball all over the gym, and the Rockets couldn't buy an open basket. They easily could have been up by 15-plus points in the first quarter in Game 1. That, to me, is where that was an opportunity lost, because Golden State in game one shot lights out on open shots. The Rockets were not that way, especially early in the game where Golden State was having all kinds of issues with their ball security. The Rockets just could not, you know, they weren't able to knock down open threes. They shot great from three in game two, but the opposite was true. The Rockets in the first quarter, in the first half, I don't know what that was. I mean, they were throwing the ball all over the place. I mean, you're outscored 20-0 in points off turnovers. You're not going to be. It's going to be hard to beat anybody in the league, let alone a road game against this Golden State team. So yes, they have to play better. They can right off the bat tomorrow night. They've got to get off to a better start. They cannot dig themselves in an early hole. They've got to knock down their shots. They've got to stop throwing the ball all over the place. They've got to be better in that department. But you can't miss open shots at home. You can't continue to turn the ball over. Golden State is not much of a paint-heavy team. But when you turn the ball over against those guys, it's over, because they will destroy you in transition. And the Rockets could not turn the ball over to start game three. They've got to set a tone early that we're here to play, we're here to compete. It's tough. It is so tough to fight from behind against Golden State, because you know, you just mentioned, they're going to go on runs. They have their offensive talent is too great to completely shut down Durant and Curry and Thompson, who they've done a pretty good job on, especially on Steph Curry in this series. They've got to get off to a better start. They've got to set a better tone. They've got to get the crowd involved in the game early on in game three, and then move forward from there. They cannot play from behind. They've got to stop turning it over. And again, hopefully the rebounding problems will cure themselves as this series shifts back to use. But again, I go back to the point, Golden State is an all-time great team. You've got to play near perfect basketball to beat these guys, and we have not seen it. We saw it, I think, multiple times, even when the Rockets were shorthanded against these guys in the regular season. We need to see it starting tomorrow night.
Bonus question that I meant to ask you earlier and got sidetracked. Sure. Are we done with the officiating critiques? Because to me, it feels like the Rockets, the team, they played that card after game one. It was more balanced in game two. And I'm not going to say that it's going to be a non-story, but it just feels like to me that the Rockets themselves, they're tired of talking about it. They said what needed to be said after game one. And at this point, it's just about getting things sorted out on the floor.
I hope so. I can only tell you from personal perspective, I'm tired of hearing about officiating. Right. Look, in game one, that crew had a bad day. I consider Zach Zarba one of the better officials in the league. He had a bad day. That crew had a bad day. It happens. Sometimes the calls go in your favor. Sometimes they don't. That's why I personally don't harp on officiating too much, unless there's something completely and totally egregious, i.e. when Kevin Durant was 3 feet out of bounds in the regular season and they missed that. I mean, that one I kind of lost my mind on, because that was so obvious and so egregious and it's so bad. I don't know how they missed it, but I think it just, sometimes the calls go your way, sometimes they don't. Sometimes officials have bad days. There are times where I get off the air and I'm like, man, I suck today. And they're, you know, and players have good days, players have bad days. Everybody has bad days. Sometimes it happens. So for me, yes, I am personally tired of hearing about officiating. This series, in my opinion, will not be won or lost based on officiating. Quite frankly, I don't think game one, even though the Rockets did get the short end of the straw in game one, I ultimately don't think that game one was won or lost because of the officiating. Yes, a lot of calls did not go their way. Yes, it would have been a difference if Klay Thompson would have been called for those step under fouls early in the game in foul trouble, because that would have completely changed Steve Kerr's rotation. But the Rockets had tons of open shots that they did not hit. The officials did not cause all the Rockets turnover problems in the first quarter and first half of game two. They won't cause the Rockets to miss shots moving forward. There will be stretches, I assure you, tomorrow night when the Rockets get the benefit of the whistle. The Warriors do not. I learned a long time ago, my sport was baseball, I was a pitcher, to stop complaining about the strike zone, because human error is, and I know, Ben, officiating is near and dear to your heart in all sports, but to me, you just got to suck it up, deal with it, and move forward. And I think that goes for both teams. Because let's just let, let's just call a spade here. I think the two teams playing here in this series, Houston and Golden State, complain and whine more than any other teams in the league. I thought Draymond Green, again, as frustrating as he can be, had very poignant comments about officiating coming out of game two. And quite honestly, I hope he looks at himself in the mirror, because he's as bad as anybody in the league when it comes to flailing, complaining, and arguing. There's nothing you can do about it. Bad calls are going to happen. Good calls are going to happen. It's going to work in your favor. It's not going to work in your favor. I hope this is all behind us now, and the Rockets, again, can just get back to shot making, rebounding, ball security, and getting back in this series tomorrow night. Because I think, ultimately, if they can win the game tomorrow, I think this will be a really confident group going into game four. Look, they're playing a Golden State team that's won at least a road game in the last 20 playoff series. You would think that Golden State is going to be – they're certainly capable of winning in Houston. The Rockets now have to win twice out in Oakland. So you've got to preserve your home floor, and that means ignoring the officiating and taking care of what you can control, because there's nothing that the players on the floor for either team in any game can do about the officiating. And that's kind of my two cents, my rant, and my soapbox on it. Again, I thought they got the short end of the stick in game one, but I've seen plenty of games where the Rockets have gotten the benefit of the doubt on the whistle. I think it tends to even itself out. And again, long story short, I hope the officiating conversation is behind us.
Even by my standards, I hope it is too. And the way I look at it.
I might be speaking to the wrong guy about this.
No.
You probably have different thoughts on it than I do, and that's okay.
I largely agree. I thought, the Rockets got the short end of the stick in game one, and I thought the front office, the leaks to ESPN and The Athletic, they played the cards that they had to play, and I think we both agree it got better in game two. So.
I thought game two was well officiated.
Yeah, with Scott Foster, of all people. Imagine that. But to me, it was a storyline after game one, and the Rockets dealt with it, and they got better results, and so hopefully, that's the end of it. It certainly was not a perfect whistle in game two, but it was better.
You're never going to get a perfect whistle.
Right, of course not.
And this is what I say, obviously most people don't have the luxury of sitting up close and, for an NBA game. It's a confined space played by the world's best athletes. These are Giants. It's a really, really hard game to officiate. Typically once a year, I'll end on this, on the officiating. The NBA has broadcast meetings where they get everybody, all the broadcast people from around the league. We're talking about announcers, producers, so on and so forth, every team around the league. And typically part of those broadcast meetings is you have a little bit of a referee camp, because the officials kind of are going through their preseason meetings at the same time. I mean, they get us all together in a room, they run through some clips, and then they randomly call on people on the room, and we think that we're smart, we think that we know the rules. Sometimes when they call on people, they get it right, but quite a bit of the times they don't. I personally don't pretend to know the rules better than the officials. You go back, how many years ago was it when they had some replacement guys? Was it the preseason, or did it carry over to the regular season?
I think it was just the preseason.
If you want to complain about NBA officiating now, think back to that time. If you think NBA officiating is bad, watch a college basketball game. these are the best people at what they do. They're not perfect. It's a super hard game to officiate. I'll be honest with you. I think the league has actually made the jobs of officials too difficult. I think there are too many rules. I think there are too many gray areas. I think there are too many situations that they have. Not only do they have to watch the game in real time, but they have to interpret things. And I think they need. I think it's become too complicated for officials. I would like to see the league pull back on some of this stuff and simplify some of the rules, because I just think there's too much for these guys to think about in real time. And I do think the vast majority of the officials, who you meet them at these meetings, they're good guys, they're professionals. Their goal is to do the best job that they can. Certain guys obviously have tendencies. We all do. That's why me personally, I tend to not harp on officiating that much, because I just think that there's nothing you can do about it. You just got to suck it up, play the game, and if things don't go your way, you have to try to find a way to overcome it. Because I used to get, when I couldn't get strikes on the corners when I was pitching, when I was younger, we're talking like 12 years old, I mean, I would throw a fit. And I eventually stopped because it got me nowhere. And I just think that, you know, just play the game, deal with it, don't let it be a distraction, because at some point you will get the benefit of the doubt. It's just the way things go.
Would Angel Hernandez have tossed 12-year-old Craig Ackerman?
He would have thrown me out of the game early.
There you go.
Very, very early. And you know what? Just like in life, some basketball players are better than others. Some engineers are better than others. Some politicians are better than others. Some broadcasters are better than others. Some officials are better than others. And so sometimes, you know, you get guys who aren't as good as others, and it shows. I really do think that the league, based on my personal experience dealing with them, I think the league takes it very serious. The integrity of the game. I can't stand all of the conversation about it being rigged. It's not. I'm telling you, a bad apple or two to me doesn't ruin a whole lot. And I think these guys really, their goal is to do the best job they can. They had a bad day in game one. It was unfortunate. It did hurt the Rockets' case. There's no question about that in game one, but you've got to try to overcome that in some form or fashion.
Fair enough. On the other end of it, as far as being a fan and watching these games, all that I want is, you know, for the team, the players to push back at times. The Rockets did that, and hopefully this is now the end of it. We move forward, and clearly there's 50 million other issues that they need to clear up before they can even begin.
There's no question about that, right? Things that they can control. You can't control the officiating. There are things that you can control, and yes, they absolutely have to clean those up. And I think it begins, as you mentioned, with a quick start, a better start in game three. Clint Capella's got to be better. He just has to.
Yep, absolutely. Folks, he's Craig Ackerman. You can follow him on Twitter at @CA_Rockets. And, of course, you can listen to his calls on the Rockets Radio Network, which, of course, is the flagship in Houston, Sports Talk 790. Or I think tomorrow will actually be on the blowtorch because of the Astros, right?
You know what? I'm not sure. I usually ask when I get to the arena what station are we on. We'll be on somewhere.
Yeah, it'll be either 740 or 790 here in Houston. We'll see who gets the blowtorch and who gets the regular.
Perhaps sometimes it's both, so I'll find out when I get in there tomorrow.
Yep, I will too. Anyway, Craig, I'll see you at Toyota Center tomorrow, okay?
Yep, looking forward to it, man. Thanks for the time, as always. I appreciate it.
Sure thing, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, thanks, Ben.
Great stuff there with Craig. Went a little bit long with our officiating rants. So with that, I will wrap up today's episode and get ready for tomorrow night's Game 3. Should be a fun atmosphere at Toyota Center and a must-win game. Look forward to seeing, hopefully, a lot of you guys, our loyal listeners, out there. If you want more content before our next show, which will come Sunday morning, recapping whatever happens in Game 3, then the best place to get it is on Twitter. Mention that Craig is on there at @CA_Rockets. I'm on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Lockdown Rockets. Be on Twitter if that's not your thing. We've also got a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockdownRockets, a website at LockdownRockets.com, an email address, LockdownRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways you can access prior content. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to improve this podcast experience for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. Also, beyond interacting and listening, remember that if you want to get this show every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets, which you can do via the new Himalaya Podcast app or Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, you can even find our most recent episode that way as well, just by telling your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets. So with the plugs complete, this is where we'll break on this Friday, May 3rd. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back Sunday for our Game 3 recap right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of everything Houston Rockets basketball.